Hey, Kevin, how are you recovering from the fight last week? A lot of bruises, black eye, anything, broken bones or anything like that?
I got everything popped back into place. I got the bruises cut and stitched up. I'm ready for round two, baby.
Oh, they cut you, huh? You had them cut you.
They cut me. Cut it. They cut it.
I still got a little ringing in my ears.
From the versus throwdowns.
Yeah, we got some heavyweights coming for the round two this week. But
yeah,
you know what? There's some interesting stuff going on, Kevin. We're starting to maybe see a little bit of the end of quarantine. Things are starting to slowly open back up.
Hold your horses there, buddy. It depends on which state you're in.
Well, apparently, at least in the state I am, they're just going full forget it. We're opening up. Because I got a flash on my Facebook page today. Tampa Bay Comic Con will, in fact, happen on July 10th through 12th.
Mm. Well, Gen Con has been canceled. Dragon Con hotels have done something cool. They are, you know how Dragon Con hotels have this legacy program?
Yeah. I think I know where you're going because I think I got a note about this.
They, and if you do not re-up for the following year while you're there that present year, then you lose your legacy status. Well, they're not doing that this year. Anyone that has a reservation this year, because they're going to pretty much cancel it here, your reservation will be held over through 2021. So,
yeah, no, that's what I
and
do.
There was an announcement from the governor of California or his office or something saying that teams may gather and play to empty stadiums starting, like, they're talking about, like, probably like soccer and some other, like, maybe basketball or whatever. I think through July is when they can start doing that. And then I also heard that they may continue the basketball season in Vegas to empty stadiums, but they'll allow the tested players and, of course, their families to come and then allow them to stay there. Have you heard about this possibility?
The NBA is looking at two different sites. They're looking at it for the Western teams, Vegas, and doing that, and for the Eastern teams, actually here in Orlando at the Disney World complexes.
Yeah, so they can all stay in the same area, not travel and get on planes, different planes, and with the risk of spreading anything that way. So they're all kind of in the same area and they'll play that off. And then also they were talking about having, because Las Vegas is opening up earlier, they're talking about the Los Angeles football teams, the Chargers and the Rams, possibly playing a preseason game or two at the Raiders new stadium.
If that stadium is ready.
Yeah, it'll be ready.
That'll be interesting. Another thing I was reading as far as pro sports go is they're actually talking about finding a way to integrate a face mask into NFL players' helmets. You know, basically made out of N95 material.
Interesting.
So
you mean everyone's going to start looking like Marshawn Lynch?
Apparently so. I don't know. Here in my neck of the woods, everybody was losing their mind because Tom Brady had an unofficial team event today where they all practiced together for the first time.
Yeah.
So, but there is other things actually going on in fandom outside sports world. Tomorrow, Kevin, for the first time in about 6 weeks or so, new comics come out.
Wow, that's good.
So very happy for a lot of our retailers.
Does that mean
friends.
Comic book stores are starting to open up and stuff?
Oh yeah. A lot of them. Hey, the one down here that I'm good friends with the owner, Titan Comics, has been open for a few weeks now.
Cause I heard, Scott Botman, you know, our co-host of the, What a Piece of Junk, saying that he got to go to his comic book store. They just couldn't go in and hang out.
Yeah. There's no like hanging. It's going, get what your stuff. And they're not doing any like gaming nights yet or anything like that.
I went, since the first time since the pandemic on my day off yesterday, I went to my favorite used vinyl record store place. It's about maybe 20 minutes south of here. And he was actually open. I like going there from time to time because he carries laser discs.
Yes, Kevin and his laser discs. Yes. But we got a lot of interesting things to talk about this week. And we do have round two of verses with a couple of really big heavy hitters, Kevin.
Yeah, we do.
So I think without further ado, let's do this thing.
This is the Culture Clash.
So welcome to Culture Clash episode 170. Of course, this is your home for fandom news, reviews, and whatever crazy Kevin and I can come up with. And at this point, we might all just be more than just a little crazy. It could be insane around here, Kevin.
This is true. Very true. We were insane anyway, so.
That's true, but I'm seeing you gnaw on, think about, you're looking at Alf rather like he's rather appetizing.
Alf is speaking of Alf. I'm in the garage, right, of the house here, and this is the podcast studio that I have, and there's like three windows, two of them which I've blocked off to help with the sound a little bit, but also to keep all the sunlight from, you know, being weird. But I have one window over here, and in the window I have two people looking out. It looks funny when you walk by the house because you can see it. I've got Alf, and then I've got Puppet Angel.
I love Puppet Angel. Who doesn't love Puppet Angel?
I have to take a picture of it because it looks funny.
So, but
By the way, real quick. Sorry. I was on Tubi and I decided to watch like five or six episodes of the first season of Alf because I wanted to get kind of caught up on it. And then I was really curious because I was kind of reading up on it. When Alf ended, apparently, it ended kind of on a cliffhanger, but then they like brought Alf back for like,
no, here's what they did. Alf did end on a cliffhanger. It made it look like he was going to go home, and it turned out it was a trap by the government.
Yes. I saw, and cause I went back and watched the last episode to see what happened. But apparently there was like another short series that kind of explained what happened after that.
It wasn't really a short series. It was more like a 2-hour TV movie.
Was that what it was? Okay.
Where they help him escape, and he actually does end up going home.
Okay. And it was funny, too, because like episode 5 or 6, there's a flashback where he's on Melmac, and he's with his friends, you know, and they have different, like, Alf-looking creatures, and then there was a girl that was his girlfriend or whatever. But I was reading up on it. Apparently, the guy that played the father, he hated working on that show, apparently.
Oh yeah. I remember hearing something about that.
And part of the reason was, and it was tough on the actors because the show required a lot of setup for the Alf puppet. So there was a lot of like little trap doors around the set for the Alf puppeteer to kind of like hide in. So you had to be careful where to go. And then because Alf was a puppet, and they also had a little person play Alf when he would run around. And so the show had a lot of long hours in setup because of the Alf setup, basically. And they didn't film it in front of a live audience. They piped in that laughter afterwards. They put in laugh tracks. Apparently he was so happy to be done with that show. So.
Yeah. No, I can understand that. I mean, working with puppets and everything that comes with it is hard. I mean, I know people love working with the Muppets, but it's a challenge.
I love that show though. The guy that does the voice was also the producer of the show, and I love Alf. Alf's great.
Yeah. Well, before we lose any cats around here, hi George, Kevin. Is it safe? but no, again, this is Culture Clash 170. And like I said, you're home for fandom news, reviews, and whatever crazy Kevin and I can come up with. But before we get started with everything else, Kevin, do you want to tell the good people where they can find not only Culture Clash, but everything that runs on the Fandom Podcast Network?
Yes, on our master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. Podbean also has an app that you can find the Fandom Podcast Network and download and stream from there. Fandom Podcast Network is also an Apple Podcast, iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, of course, Google Play, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and on Melmac. We are also on Facebook at Fandom Podcast Network. You can also email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. We're also on Instagram and Twitter at Fandom Podcast Network. My name is Kevin. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Spartan_Phoenix. Kyle?
You can find me on Twitter at AKyleW or on Instagram at AKyleFandom.
There is two ways you can support us, people. Please, you know, we do this for free and we got to pay for stuff. So head on over to TeePublic. And if you search for Fandom Podcast Network or the shows of our network, you'll find some t-shirts there, and anything that you buy there, we get a little kickback, helps pay for our fees and electricity and lights and all that kind of stuff. And also, we'd love reviews. Please head over to Apple Podcasts and iTunes and please leave us a rated review. Of course, we love 5 stars, but we love reviews in general. And just search Fandom Podcast Network and then you know, give us a shout out for Culture Clash there.
Yeah, so Kevin, before we get started with the regular news, I've made a segment for you this week. I figure it's time.
Wickety, 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 wick.
We have some Kevin John Wick news, specifically news on the Continental. I'm sorry, wait.
What did you just say?
I said we have Kevin's John Wick news.
Okay.
with news specifically on the Continental from Chad Stileski himself.
Chad's my man.
So did you read this article, Kevin? Because I tagged you in it on Facebook.
I did. I am to quote Scott Pilgrim, I skimmed it.
Wow. Professionalism at its best, ladies and gentlemen.
I was at work when I got it, so I was kind of like pressed for time.
So the series is still set to debut on Stars. John Wick franchise director, and he's also the executive producer on the Continental. Chad Stileski is serving up some new plot details to help keep us hooked. Speaking with Fandom, this article appears on Collider. Stileski opened up about what separates the Continental from the John Wick franchise timeline, despite both movies and the show very much occupying the same world. Per Stileski, the Continental will have a very different timeline structure and a very different perspective of character, implying the show will cover a longer stretch of time than the 1 week and some change timeline utilized in the John Wick franchise. Stileski went on to reveal an interesting new plot detail, telling Fandom the show is about how deep the world goes and not just about assassins, but everything that's included. And a lot of the origin stories are some of the characters that you see in John Wick. Kevin, this has got to get you excited.
I am. The buzz around this has been happening for a while. And obviously one of the most important things about the John Wick movies, and they wouldn't be what they are if it weren't for this world that was created, in the world of assassins and their commerce and how they communicate you know, whatever it is, the promises that they make, you know, with blood and all this stuff, and how they stay underneath the radar by using equipment from the 80s and early 90s, you know.
Yeah. Now, but so if we're going to get origins of characters, we know who do you think you who would you want to, whose origin sticks out to you that you
Okay. I really, really, really want to know what John Leguizamo's character is. I need some, because, oh gosh, what was his character's name? The guy that ran the cars, you know. That fixed John Wick's car, basically. Yeah. What's his name? Anyway,
I want to
know his backstory of why he's kind of a protected gangster figure, you know. Why he has the power that he does, why he has a relationship with John Wick. And a friendly one too, you know, someone that they trust, and that, you know, he stood up for John Wick when he basically slapped or punched that little punk kid that killed Wick's dog, and saying, "Do you know whose car this is?" And you know, sets up the favorite line of the whole entire trilogy, you know, and you know, "Why did you slap my son?" He's like,
and you know, real quick, his character's name was Aurelio.
Aurelio, yes, okay, you know, and then the Russian mobster, you know, says, "Why did you strike my son?" He's like, "Well, he stole John Wick's car and killed his dog." And then you see this tough, you know, gangster go, "Oh." Yeah.
No. I think for me, the character what about you? I want. Oh, I was going to say the character I want is Sharon.
Lance Riddick's character.
I think there's so much there that they could go into.
You know, it's funny. I'm glad you said that, because he's got a history, and I want to know what the hell that is, because even though he's like Mr. Behind the Desk guy, when he got to get in some action there in John Wick 3 Parabellum and you know, kill some guys with Wick at the Continental. I just love the fact that he was like, yeah, I'll watch your dog.
He likes the puppy.
Yeah. There's just so much to dive into. And I, you know what? I would love if, I don't know if they could, but I would also love to see if they could get Willem Dafoe to kind of do a backstory, you know, before they kill him off, you know?
Yeah, that would be cool. I'd love to see Adrian Padalecki actually make an appearance again.
Yes. Yeah. Or even the old guy that she ended up killing, that he was supposed to watch her in the first one, you know, and he died.
Yeah.
There's just so much they could do.
Yeah. So, well, with that, Kevin, you got your wickety wickety wick news, but it's time for the rest of the news. So are you up for it?
Let's news.
So topping off the stories this week, we're starting to get some news in, but something I think is a lot of people are very excited about, because there was a lot of love for the first season of this series when it came out, and it's kind of being forgot about because it's been so long, but Netflix announced finally the release date for the second season of The Umbrella Academy, and it's going to come out July 31st, Kevin. A lot of people really love this show.
I did not give this show a shot.
You need to go back and revisit it. It was quite entertaining.
It was canceled, and I just didn't dive into it because some I felt like it was canceled or something.
No, it did very well for Netflix, but it's been almost a year and a half, maybe 2 years since the first season came out. Kind of like Lost in Space, where it had that really big gap between seasons on Netflix. Okay. So, but yeah, you need to go back and revisit Umbrella Academy because I think you'll like it. If you like The Boys, I think there's kind of in some ways, there's a little bit of similar kind of feel here. Maybe not quite over the top like The Boys was, but it has more of an edge to it.
That's what I can't wait for is The Boys. God, give me that, please.
And I know they're wrapping up on that soon. So as far as the post-production goes, so that should be coming soon. But we also got some pretty big Mandalorian news, Kevin, because The Mandalorian's about to get Justified. Timothy Oliphant has been cast in The Mandalorian, and the rumors, and big emphasis on the rumors, is he might be wearing the Boba Fett armor, but he might not be Boba Fett.
Yes. Okay. So there was a book that came out that is unfortunately considered canon.
Aftermath.
Aftermath, where Boba Fett's something described as Boba Fett's armor was found on Tatooine by a certain someone. Mm-hmm. And so maybe the original Boba Fett's still dead. So I wish he wasn't, but maybe his Boba Fett, the armor, will still be alive.
It could be interesting. Of course, the rumors of Timur Morrison playing Boba Fett, maybe Boba Fett is still alive and coming after his armor.
Okay. So it says, now, depending on which article that you read, the one that you did, is it from IGN? Is that what it's from?
No, this was actually, I believe, from Screen Rant.
Screen Rant, okay.
Oh, no, I'm sorry, 411 Mania, I'm sorry.
411, okay. I got one off slashfilm.com, and they say, or where they got it from, was, our sources have confirmed to us that Oliphant filmed scenes wearing Boba Fett's Mandalorian armor for an upcoming season of The Mandalorian. That might sound confusing because earlier this month it was reported that Temuera Morrison, who originated the role of Jango Fett, Boba Fett's clone father, had been cast as Boba Fett. So what's going on here? If Morrison is playing the role of Boba Fett, then Timothy Oliphant is playing an inanimate character named Cobb Vanth, introduced in Chuck Wendig's Aftermath book series. Vanth is a self-appointed sheriff of the Tatooine-based settlement Freetown. He wears a mysterious set of Mandalorian armor that was acquired from the Jawas, who scavenged the wreckage of Jabba's sail barge. Shortly after so this gets interesting here. And it says, you may also recall that it was the site of where Boba Fett was thrown into the Sarlacc pit. It's assumed that the Mandalorian armor purchased by Vanth is none other than the infamous green armor formerly known by galaxy's most notorious bounty hunter, Boba Fett. Very little has been revealed about Vanth's backstory. So, yes, we will see, I guess.
So, Kevin, have you been watching, or I know you've been watching the a gallery Mandalorian documentary, but have you watched the third episode yet?
Yes, the one with the cast. I love this show. This is really cool.
Yeah. How awesome was the respect that Gina Carano showed Carl Weathers?
Oh, my God. That was really, really cool. Yeah, it's, you know, she, to sum up, she basically, you know, said that he kind of commands the moment that he is in when he's acting and he's talking. And I also like the fact that they weren't expecting to bring him back, you know, but, you know, he was supposed to pretty much, you know, he was introduced in one, he was supposed to die in three, but they brought him back, you know, with that little trick with the Beskar and stuff hidden in his pocket. But I love the fact that they wanted to bring him back. The other thing that I thought was really cool was how Carl Weathers was talking about acting out, acting with someone with the helmet on, and how it was a challenge because usually he likes to read people's eyes, you know, and kind of react from that as well when they're reading parts and stuff. But when someone has the helmet on, it's cool to see that they have to kind of, it's more of a challenge. But the other thing that was cool about that was you got to see not just the one stunt actor underneath the Mandalorian armor, but the other one as well, which I didn't know.
Yeah, no, and that's what I, one of the points I want to bring up is because I was glad they did that because those guys each spend about equal time in that suit. Obviously, the one is John Wayne's grandson, and the other one, I don't ask me to pronounce his name. I can't do it, but he's been in a lot of things, actually. He's done a lot of, like, parkour in movies, and to clarify,
the John Wayne grandson guy, he's the one that does a lot of the shooting and the stuff
gunslinging,
like that. But the one that does like all of the fighting and stuff like that, that's the other guy.
Yeah, and then Pedro does stuff in the suit as well, and of course he does all the voiceover work as well. So, but the other thing I really liked too, and I got a kick out of this, was I love, again, Dave Filoni is coming out of us as a star from this series. But I love the conversation between Favreau and Filoni because it's very obvious these two are working together on every episode, even if there's a different director. They're both acting as producers here. And I love when they're talking about Carl Weathers, how they originally had him in a mask-looking alien, and they were like, we can't cover his face.
Yes, because of that voice.
Yeah, that voice, you know? So, but no, I mean, this series has just been outstanding, and I'm so glad they're doing this as kind of a filler until the next season starts. So, I'm just been thoroughly enjoying that. But Kevin, the other thing is, and this might be to me the most exciting piece of the news of the week. Are you ready to visit some strange new worlds?
Yes.
I am doing happy dance over and over because they are giving Anson Mount, Rebecca Romijn Stamos, and Ethan Peck their own show, telling the tales of the Enterprise before Kirk and telling us about more of Adventures of Captain Pike, number one, and a younger Spock. This was by far the thing I loved about Discovery Season 2 was Anson Mount as Pike. And I actually even enjoyed Ethan Peck as Spock. I really kind of like what he brought to the Spock character for this time period. And even the shorts that we've seen Rebecca Romijn Stamos, I thought she nailed it as number one. I cannot wait for this. It's greenlit. That's the only thing we know is that CBS All Access has put the order in. We're probably at least a year to maybe 2 years away before we actually see this show filmed and put it in the can and everything like that. But I'm excited to know this is coming, Kevin.
Yeah. And what's really cool is you get to see the Enterprise, you know, this version of the Enterprise, which I think is great. And there's a lot of story to tell here. And, Anson Mount as Pike was the shining star of, season two. And I'm excited for that new cast. That's going to be really, really cool.
Yeah. I am thrilled about this. I think, you know,
are we going to get a Nurse Chapel?
I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. But I will say this. This has the potential to be the best of the new Trek shows.
Hope so.
So now I do have a question for you, Kevin. And I want your honest answer. Can you do a Furiosa movie without Charlize?
You want my honest answer?
Honest answer.
No. And I'm done with this.
Okay, so yeah, apparently George Miller thinks you can. This is not a great decision.
Look, let me just say, I am not excited for this at all. You know, I was kind of upset that, you know, they were going to just do a movie about Furiosa instead of, and not include Mad Max. Because Mad Max Fury Road was Charlize's movie. It wasn't a Mad Max film, to be honest with you. And I wanted to see more Mad Max. I wanted him to say more than three or four words, you know, Tom Hardy. Now, I like the movie, and I'm happy that it introduced the character in that world. But, you know, George Miller is really going to have to he's really going to have to sell me on this, because right now I'm not buying.
Right now, when I heard this news, I wasn't buying either. I was curious. I like Furiosa enough, and Charlize was amazing, that I was curious about this, because they were trying to set it up as a prequel movie to explain how Furiosa got to be the way she is. Now, there are rumors, and I'm not saying this was going to make me jump out and see the movie, but they at least intrigue me, because the issue George Miller had was that Charlize would have to be de-aged, and he doesn't believe in the de-aging technology that's out there. He doesn't think it's any good. So the actress that is rumored to be playing a younger Furiosa, and again, she's not Charlize, but I'm at least intrigued, is Jodie Comer. Are you familiar with Jodie Comer, Kevin?
No.
She is the star of Killing Eve.
I haven't seen this show.
It's very intriguing. I don't think you can replace Charlize, but this is at least has me intrigued enough. I'm not saying I'm excited for this film, but at least I'm going to keep a little bit of my corner, keep an eye on it from the corner of my eye and my peripheral vision to see what, but I don't think this is going to happen without Charlize Theron. You can't do this without, I don't think the studio is going to say they're going to green light this and not have Charlize in it.
Yeah.
So, well, let's talk about A Blast from the Past, Kevin, because I didn't know this was actually official, but I guess Scream 5 is coming.
I heard rumors about this.
Well, apparently it's more than rumors, because David Arquette has officially been cast to return as Dewey in Scream 5. I'm like, I didn't even know this was a thing. I know Neve Campbell was dropping rumors.
You know what? We need to start carrying sound bites that we can just click and it would make the sound. And if I did, it would be a cricket noise right now.
Kevin, I look at it this way. I found it intriguing because, I mean, the original Scream was a game-changing film.
Yeah, the original one was. I didn't need to see 2, 3, or 4, and I don't need to see 5. Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm not excited about this.
No, I'm not either, but I just found it interesting because it's just like, wow, I didn't even see where this has actually been made official and greenlit.
Yeah. So, now, I heard rumors, but I didn't care, so I didn't, you know.
Yeah. And finally, The Rock and Emily Blunt are teaming up yet again. Of course, they were supposed to be in the Jungle Cruise this summer, but because of everything that happened, that's been pushed back to next summer. But this time they're teaming up, not for Disney, but they're doing the Netflix thing, which seems to be getting a lot of big names, as they're going to be doing a comic book movie based on the 4-issue miniseries from 1999 by Scott Lobdell of Uncanny X-Men and Generation X fame called Ball and Chain. This is basically was a comedy comic where it was a divorcing couple who gained superpowers thanks to a meteor. But the problem is the only way their powers work is if they're in close proximity to each other.
That's a clever idea. I like that.
And with these two, I've seen some of their interviews and some of the things they were doing promotional wise for Jungle Cruise. Emily Blunt and The Rock have some legit chemistry.
I'm not convinced of that yet. I'll have to wait to see that. But I like Emily Blunt. I want to see her in a sequel to Live, Die, Repeat.
Yeah, that. Tomorrow. And I'm still all aboard the fans out there, and because I think they're right. They need to just cast the husband and wife team of Emily Blunt and John Krasinski as the Invisible Woman and Mr. Fantastic for Fantastic
Four. There you go. Yeah. Yeah.
So with that, though, Kevin, I'm going to ask you, have you seen anything? Because I really didn't get a chance to see much this weekend because I was doing stuff for Couch Potato Theaters.
Yeah, I saw a few things.
Okay, well, with that then, let's do a little
buy it, stream it, or unsee it.
Or as I'm going to call this.
Wait. Can I say it? Because I want you to like do that cool vocalizer thing with mine, okay? We're also going to do some
buy it, stream it, or unsee it.
That's not going to come out as cool. Sorry, you just don't have
it. Oh, come on, man. At least do something with it.
Yeah, I'll see what I can do. But, Kevin, really, if I might just say gag me with a spoon. Which is setting up your first movie for Buy It, Stream It, or Unsee It.
Yeah, I came across the remake of the classic 80s Valley Girl film that is now streaming. I think it's on video on demand, and it's basically a kind of it's a musical version remake of Valley Girl. Kind of, sort of, High School Musical meets kind of Valley Girl. And it's the same type of story where, you know, you got the Valley Girls, you know, and they kind of go out of their comfort zone. And the main girl meets up with this kind of punk kid, and he crashes the party, and they have sparks. And because they're on different side of the tracks, you know, both of their friends don't really accept each other's friends and stuff. But it was cheesy, but I actually kind of enjoyed it. They had Deborah Foreman in a cameo, who played the original Valley Girl. She had a part in a where she was where the girl was buying the prom dress. She was in there. And E.J. Daly, Elizabeth Daly, is now more known for voiceover work with like My Little Pony and I think Powerpuff Girls or whatever it is. You know, she's done a lot of that stuff. She also had a small cameo. The girl from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was in it too. I'm forgetting the girl.
What's her name? Chloe Bennett, the one who plays Daisy?
Yes. Yeah, she was in it as well. It was all right. It was entertaining. I like the fact, I like musicals to a certain degree, and they picked a good range of 80s songs to kind of break out in a song and do it. A little cheesy, but, if you're in for something that, you don't want to take anything too serious and you want to lose yourself in some fun 80s stuff, they did a good job of recreating the cars and the sets and the costumes. And I was very familiar with a lot of the locations they filmed in. But the movie starts off with Alicia Silverstone playing the mom, picking up her daughter who broke up with her girlfriend, and she'd lied about where she went in present day time. And then instead of sending her up to her room to be grounded, she starts talking about this story of her life in the 80s. And then there's a girl that plays the younger version of Alicia Silverstone. So, and then kind of cuts in back and forth, Alicia Silverstone telling the stuff of what's happening. It was pretty funny. So.
Interesting. So, Kevin, I have a question for you. Are you developing some kind of stalker thing with Phoebe Waller-Bridge?
Aaron turned me on to this show. I'm two episodes in. Show on HBO, and it's also written by Phoebe Waller-Bridge, I think, and she also is in it in a couple episodes. A series called Run on HBO. Two ex-lovers activate a long-planned escape to disappear together, and it stars Domhnall Gleeson, from General Hux from the Star Wars movies sequel trilogy, and Merritt Weaver, who is in The Walking Dead. I believe she was she like the one that was like the doctor or something like that, I think. I think she was killed off, if I remember correctly. But Merritt Weaver's character all of a sudden just gets this text from Domhnall Gleeson in the first episode. She has a normal life going on, and they haven't been together in years, and it just says run. And she drops everything and gets to New York to meet up with him. And weird stuff kind of starts to happen, and stuff starts to kind of come out. And you're wondering, like, why do they have this escape plan together?
Interesting. Yes. HBO always giving you interesting things, but Kevin.
Yeah, and they're only like 20 minute episodes or whatever it is, 30 minute episodes. So far, how many episodes is it? I want to say 7 episodes. Yes, 7 episodes. Yeah. And they're releasing week to week right now. So I think they're on episode 3 or 4 right now, for 3 coming up. So yeah, interesting. I'm going to stay with it, see what it's like.
Next question for you. Do you prefer your hedgehogs small and cute, or really fast with an obsession with gold rings?
So Sonic the Hedgehog.
Yeah, this movie has kind of got an infamous history at this point.
I don't know about that. You'll have to go in on that yourself. But my coworker, who has a daughter, watched it with his daughter. He says, you should watch Sonic the Hedgehog. And I'm like, well, I used to play that video game with Camille a lot. And Jim Carrey is in it. And I was like, you know what? I'll check this out. I'm kind of curious about it. And I watched it, and I actually really enjoyed this. It was a fun family film. It was funny. charming. Stars Ben Schwartz as the voice of Sonic. James Marsden is the local police officer that befriends him. And Jim Carrey is Dr. Robotnik, the villain.
This is the first time we've seen Jim Carrey in a while.
Yes. And he was really good in this. And I just got to say, you have to watch all the way till the end because there's like kind of like a hidden scene towards the end there. Ben Schwartz was great as the voice of Sonic. And it was really, really, it was a lot of fun. I really, really enjoyed it. And the rings are involved, of course, because they're kind of like a way to transport and stuff like that. And the chemistry between Ben Schwartz's Sonic and James Marsden is also entertaining as well.
Yeah. Now, I got to throw this out to you, because here's the infamous history of Sonic the Hedgehog. This movie was due out almost a year ago. The first trailer hit, and they had completely redesigned Sonic to make him look almost more humanish.
Right.
In the face, and not more like the video game. And it was so hated in the trailers, they went back and completely redid Sonic throughout the entire movie and made him look more like the video game.
It sounds familiar. I don't remember it, though, but it sounds familiar.
It cost a pretty penny.
Remember, it sure did.
We talked about reshoots on a Couch Potato Theater we just recorded with Lee, where and the expense of that. A lot more expensive for these reshoots, I promise you.
Well, we'll see. But I thought he looked great. And I thought the effects were pretty good. So, yeah.
One other thing we're going to hit you up on, Kevin, because you're doing a little bit of homework for Union Federation.
Yes, I decided to start my Orville rewatch. I've done with season one and about a quarter of the way through season two right now. It's been a lot of fun revisiting that show. I'm really looking forward to whenever season three does come out, but I'm excited about it. So, and by the way, Kyle, this segment that we're in right now called Buy It, Stream It, or Unsee It, and I think I should get the cool digitized voice on this. You need to see some stuff, dude. You need to start contributing to the segment.
Hey, I think I did all documentaries last week. Thank you.
Documentary schmockumentaries. Come on, dude. Watch a movie, will you?
No, I've been watching older movies because for other things, you know. Which are kind
of, I know you've been doing all the couch. We've been watching all the Couch Potato Theater stuff,
you know, but no. And you know what? I have a nice holiday weekend coming up. So I think I'm going to be able to finally catch up on a few things, but, yeah, we got a special Union Federation. We're going to be working soon, explaining to you why the Orville is a key rewatch while we're waiting for things to reopen.
That's true. Very, very true.
So, but with that, we're going to take a quick break here and get our boxing gloves on, our kick fighters on, and two men enter, one man leave in the Thunderdome because Versus is coming up. But first, we got a little promo to tell you all about everything that is here on the Fandom Podcast Network.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. We'd like to continue to feed your ears by inviting you to listen to our other awesome shows on the Fandom Podcast Network. It starts with our flagship show, Culture Clash, a weekly pop culture podcast. For you movie fans, we have Couch Potato Theater, where we celebrate our favorite cult classic and guilty pleasure movies. We also have Time Warp. That's our fandom flashback show, where we like to look back on our favorite fandoms. For you NFL fans, we have the End Zone podcast. And of course, for you Alfred Hitchcock fans, please check out Good Evening. For you Star Trek and Orville fans, we also have the Union Federation podcast. And for you hard rock metal fans, we have Hair Metal, the 1980s rock metal podcast. Doctor Who fans, we've got one for you as well. We have Type 40, our Doctor Who podcast. If you're a fan of 1980s action films, please check out Lethal Mullet. And our newest show, we have a Star Wars podcast called What a Piece of Junk. You can enjoy all of these great Fandom Podcast Network shows on our master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. The FPNet can also be found on the Podbean app. The Fandom Podcast Network can also be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. Please search on Facebook for Fandom Podcast Network. You can also email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. We are also on Instagram and Twitter under Fandom Podcast Network. Thank you for listening, and remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, let's get ready to throw down! It's time for Versus on the Culture Clash.
You just broke a bunch of eardrums right now, bro.
Well, that's what happens. They knew it was coming. I can edit it. It is time once again for Versus, Kevin. But first, we need to rehash last week's big battle between the Scott brothers. We had a family feud, Ridley Scott versus Tony Scott.
This is true. Yes. So that was a good one to start off with, if I do say so. Let's see here. Let me actually follow. I had it open and my phone closed, so sorry. Let me pull it up here. Okay, so the throwdown here, Ridley Scott versus Tony Scott. Okay. So I think we made a pretty good case for both. I think both you and I were favoring Ridley Scott because he's got kind of more of the popcorn movies and they're all a little bit more rewatchable, where Ridley Scott has kind of more of the theatrical visual thing, but in, you know, usually his movies are longer as well. But you know, some of them are a little bit harder on the rewatch, wouldn't you say?
I think with Ridley, it was, you know, some epic movies and some of them are rewatchable, but there are a lot of his that it's hard to go back and rewatch them just because of the time it takes. And just they're movies you have to be in the right frame of mind to do a rewatch of.
So we had some comments. Our other family member of the podcast and my co-host for Bloody Kings, Lee Feelings, said Tony. He prefers Tony Scott. Lee, next time I want you to elaborate, please. Norman said, Ridley Scott has Alien and Blade Runner and Gladiator, genre-breaking films that have yet to be rivaled. Tony has a greater consistent body of work. My lovely fiance, Aaron, said, Norman, I see it this way. Ridley is like Jerry Goldsmith, amazing, eclectic body of work that changes from film to film. Tony is like John Williams, great, but you can spot John Williams' score a mile away. Schindler's List is an exception. Aaron also said, and let's add to Ridley's standouts, Thelma and Louise and Legend. And then Adam O'Brien replied to Aaron, I think you've nailed it. Ridley's cerebral and ditched the commercial style he may have had when he did that work. Tony commercial still has that style. Adam also replied to Norman saying, sure does with Tony, and you could guarantee when you saw his releases, they'd be a Tony Scott experience. Ridley more hot and cold, moments of genius, cerebral, and creative worlds. For every Alien Covenant, there's an Alien. For every Legend, there's Blade Runner. Buddy Stevie McLeod said, oof, difficult. So with that in mind, I agree with Norman. Johnny K says, tough. But because you've said rewatchability, I got to go with Tony. With the exception of Gladiator and Alien, I just find Top Gun, Beverly Hills Cop 2, Crimson Tide, Spy Game, etc. more enjoyable than The Martian or Black Hawk Down. My buddy Noel Wood there in Georgia, part of the Georgia Finest G.I. Joe group there. Tony all the way. Ridley tries too hard for art, and I feel that he has more misses than hits. Tony made consistent fun popcorn fare. True romance alone wins the day for him. I'm agreeing with that. Our buddy Aaron Head Moss says probably Tony Scott. Aaron, elaborate next time, please. Ryan Stanfley said, for rewatchability popcorn, I'd say Top Gun alone wins it for Tony. Ridley is amazing. Give him an idea and Russell Crowe and hang it on your asses. It's about to get real, but I feel the need. And then he puts a GIF for I feel the need for speed moment. Let's see here. Oh, and Aaron replied again saying Ridley's movies are more eclectic, beautifully shot, and more mature. Tony's are stylish, but a little empty, more like a music video. Yeah, I said it. Jennifer Walk replied to her saying, speaking of music videos, you know Ridley directed Avalon by Roxy Music. And Jennifer then also said, Ridley Scott because Tim Curry as Darkness, so good I could watch it all day. And I said, are you basing your decision only on one movie? She says, no, but that was my tipping point. Thelma and Louise, Blade Runner, Alien, Gladiator, Hannibal, G.I. Jane, Black Hawk Down, etc., etc., etc. They stand the test of time for me. Tony equals popcorn, which is not a bad thing, but Ridley's body of work for me is just better and more memorable. And there we go. So we get more votes for Tony, but it was close call.
Yeah, I think when it boils down for me is I think Ridley is more of the filmmaker in that, and we talked about this last week, his movies always seem to be like a film that you need to see on the big screen.
Not just that, but it's a little more cerebral, and I think that I agree that I think he has a little bit more hits than, I mean, he has some hits and misses, yeah. You know. Visually he's definitely got a certain style.
Yeah. I think with Tony, it's much more of his movies are always so revisitable. And I think Tony Scott definitely wins the Couch Potato Theater Trophy. Let me put it that way. Without a doubt.
Who does?
Tony Scott wins the Couch Potato Theater.
Definitely. Definitely.
So, well, let's move forward then to this week. Let's go with the rundown in one corner. He's a 2-time Oscar winner. He's done comedy. He's done drama. He's done true life stories. He's done a bit of everything. And he had one hell of a bachelor party. It's Mr. Tom Hanks.
Well, say a good intro.
Well, and his opponent in the other corner, can be angry.
He also has an Oscar.
He does have an Oscar. He is also an Oscar winner.
And he's been nominated as well for others.
Yes. He has been linked in a movie with his opponent. They've worked together. They fought each other. And he is an angry man when he wants to be. And he walks into a room and demands respect. And you give it to him because of who he is. Mr. Denzel Washington. Kevin, these are two of the heavy hitter actors of probably the last 20 years.
Oh, yeah.
Easily.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, especially in the 90s there. You know, yeah. In the early 2000s.
And it really did feel like they both kind of hit the launching pad at the same time with a movie they co-starred with each other in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I think it boosted Hanks a little bit more. Hanks actually winning the Oscar for Philadelphia. And I think he got his bigger roles quicker than Denzel did after this. But I think when you look at their two careers combined, it's tight. I think it's pretty close. So, As we did with Tony and Ridley Scott, we picked 12 movies out of each one's IMDb to kind of go against each other. Kevin, would you like
actually, to... I have 13 for Hanks. 12 for Denzel, but it's all right.
Okay, so let's go with the movies that we focused for their main body of work. Kevin, would you do the
It was tough to choose, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, without a doubt. But Kevin, will you do the rundown for Tom Hanks?
Yes. Okay, so we've got Big... Now, keep in mind, these are the movies that we picked for these actors that are most well known for. I also had to keep to for some tiebreakers with some others that didn't make the top 12-ish. I had to look at box office as well, and the impact they made and also the rewatchability. So for Tom Hanks, we've got Big, A League of Their Own, Sleepless in Seattle, Philadelphia, Forrest Gump, Apollo 13. I just put the Toy Story movies all in one. Saving Private Ryan, Castaway, Road to Perdition. I put the Robert Langdon trilogy, like the Da Vinci Code, Angels and Demons, Inferno, all that. Sully, where he plays that hero pilot that landed the plane there in the Hudson. And, of course, his run just recently as Mr. Rogers in A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. Yeah.
So, Kevin, I'm going to ask you, of this list, what do you give me two of what you feel are maybe his two most iconic movies out of this list for you?
Saving Private Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, it's a toss-up. Oh god, this is tough. Just two?
I'll give you three. We'll go three.
Hold on. Last week I gave you five. You started at three, and then I gave you five. We decided to pick our top. Well,
that's why we added a separate category this week too. We kind of adjusted for that. So give me the three that you think are like the iconic films out of that.
Saving Private Ryan, Forrest Gump, and I got to go with Big. If you're just going to give me three, I would throw in Sleepless in Seattle, but I'm going to go with Big, Forrest Gump, and Saving Private Ryan.
Well, Kevin, I'm going to agree with you wholeheartedly. I think Big starts him. Big really is the thing that truly puts him on the map. Forrest Gump, it's one of the most quotable movies ever. I mean, everybody knows who Forrest Gump is.
Yeah.
And I will say this, Forrest Gump does not hold up over time as well as you would think it would.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I mean, Saving Private Ryan is just mind-blowingly amazing.
Yeah.
So that brings us to Mr. Denzel Washington, Kevin. And if you don't mind, I will give the rundown for Denzel, where he started with Glory, then Malcolm X, Crimson Tide, Philadelphia, Training Day, Remember the Titans, Man on Fire, American Gangster, Unstoppable, Flight, The Equalizer, and The Magnificent Seven. So, Kevin, what are your three iconic movies for Mr. Washington?
Gosh, so good stuff here. For me personally, I'm going to go with, so good stuff. Training Day, American Gangster. Crimson Tide, I guess maybe. This is a tough one, dude.
Yeah.
I really love The Equalizer.
Oh yeah, The Equalizer is a lot of fun, but I think Training Day is number one. That's the movie he won an Oscar for. He was phenomenal in that. Yeah. I think Malcolm X, Spike Lee's when Denzel playing Malcolm X.
Mm-hmm.
He was nominated for that. And then to me, I think it's Crimson Tide. I think Crimson Tide was really a huge movie, and he stood up there with Gene Hackman toe to toe in that movie.
Yeah, Gene Hackman is supposed to be the heavy in that one. Well, he is.
Yeah.
But man, that's when he announced, like, yeah, I'm going to go up against any Hollywood legend actor, and I'm going to be toe to toe, like you said, and I'm not going to be second fiddle.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I go through each of their movies. I mean, all these movies we name from them are outstanding movies. But Kevin, you know, we try to narrow it down. But, you know, especially when we're talking Tom Hanks and Denzel Washington, there are other notable films that we both love in this. So I wanted to give us a chance to throw out a few of their movies that didn't make that top 12, but we love them anyway, as far as that goes. For me, starting with Tom Hanks.
Your picks are the same as mine.
Yeah. So. The Green Mile. I mean, that could have easily been in the top 12.
It's a tough watch for me, though.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of The Burbs.
Right.
Splash. And of course, Bachelor Party.
Yeah, Bachelor Party. So good. I love that comedy. He is so funny in that, too.
Yeah. Oh, and Tony Katane is Tony Katane is the hero of that movie.
Yes. I liked him also in That Thing You Do.
That was kind of
a cool film.
That was good. He also did the one with Leonardo DiCaprio, Catch Me If You Can.
Yes.
That was very good as well.
Yes.
So,
yeah. So, I wasn't a fan of Joe Versus the Volcano. No, I wasn't a fan of Turner and Hooch, because you don't kill the dog. I don't care what they say. You just don't kill the dog. And Dragnet was not a good movie. I don't care what people say.
Yeah, no, Dragnet was not a good movie. But let's look at Denzel, because I actually thought there's more of his films that I thoroughly have enjoyed that made it outside of the top 12, but I understand why they didn't. But The Book of Eli, I'm a fan of that.
Yes.
I've always been a big fan of the movie John Q.
I think I saw it once and I was done.
Yeah.
But the next film, though, if you don't mind, I'd like to mention it, because this was the film that really got Denzel Washington on my radar. And that's Ricochet, where he plays the hero cop, and I just thought he shined in that. I'm like, okay, this guy is not only could be an action star, but he's also really good. He's very charismatic.
And also, in that movie, goes toe-to-toe with a Hollywood legend.
Who is?
John Lithgow.
Yes.
I know, I loved Ricochet. Lithgow was pure evil in this film, and Denzel was great in this. Another one I'm a fan of is He Got Game, with where he had Ray Allen of the NBA fame playing Jesus Shuttleworth. As Denzel played his father. And great story out of this movie, Spike Lee directed this, is that they actually played a basketball game at the end between Ray Allen and as his character, Jesus Shuttleworth, and Denzel Washington. And Ray Allen went in thinking, oh, it's the actor, you know, I'm going to go easy on him. Well, Denzel scored 4 straight points to start the game during the filming, and Ray Allen lost his mind. They went NBA, went full NBA on Denzel Washington. But one of my most underrated Denzel Washington movies is one from early on in his career. I love The Mighty Quinn.
I don't know if I ever saw that. I don't know if I did or not. I can't remember.
No, yeah, that is it. You need to check that out. That's a great early in his career Denzel Washington movie. It's a lot of fun. And then another one I thoroughly enjoyed was Safe House with Ryan Reynolds.
I remember that one. That one was good too. There's a few others early on, like Mo Better Blues, Mississippi Masala. I do also remember liking what was it called? Deja Vu.
Yeah, Deja Vu was good.
Yeah. I didn't care for the Manchurian Candidate remake. I didn't care for that. Inside Man was okay.
Taking a Pelham 123.
Yeah, it was okay. You know, so yeah. Yeah, Book of Eli, I love that movie.
So let's make the case here first for Denzel. Because if you're going to make the case for Denzel versus Tom Hanks, I think Denzel has definitely got more of the action side to him. And yep. I think he's just as powerful of a dramatic actor as Tom Hanks. But I think when you're going to look at the action side, especially when you look at like Crimson Tide and American Gangster. And I love Remember the Titans. But Remember the Titans, I think, is a little bit more of the ensemble cast in that film as well. But, you know, when it comes to the action side, I would give the edge to Denzel. That's where he tops Hanks. And I think it's pretty even on the dramatic side.
I'll be honest. I agree with everything you just said. But I will also say I agree. I think that Denzel actually is a better actor than Tom Hanks. I will go on record and say that Denzel Washington is the best American actor in the past 20, 30 years.
I can't argue that.
I will put him as the best actor because I see the range that he's done. And the dude is just phenomenal. And he can play serious. He can play funny, charming, scary. This dude is the most accomplished and best actor in the last 30 years.
Yeah. You know, I would think if we would have done this in the 90s, Tom Hanks would win this hands down.
I think you're right. Yeah.
I think the 90s were the decade of Hanks. I mean, when we look at this, you look at Tom Hanks.
And Denzel was up and coming, but I think that Denzel has accomplished more in the 2000s than Hanks has.
Well, I agree with you. I think overall the body of work, I do think Denzel has done more movies I've enjoyed. And I think I agree with you as far as his accomplishments on the screen as an actor. But I want to just go through a quick rundown here for Tom Hanks in the 1990s, because it really kind of started for him with A League of Their Own in 92.
Yeah.
This is, you know, he had done Big, and a lot of people knew him from that, and he was considered still kind of a comedy actor. He played Jimmy Dugan in A League of Their Own in 92, then Sam Baldwin in Sleepless in Seattle in 93.
This was huge.
That was huge. Then the one that really changed for him playing Andy Beckett in Philadelphia, also in 93. Goes on to do Forrest Gump in 1994, Apollo 13 in 95, as well as the voice of Woody in 95, 96 does That Thing You Do, 98 Saving Private Ryan, also in 98 he does You Got Mail, in 99 Toy Story 2, The Green Mile, 2000 Castaways, 2002 Catch Me If You Can. Just in that,
don't forget Road to Perdition in 2002.
Road to Perdition in 2002. Tom Hanks was a working fool through the 90s.
Yes.
I mean, that you tell me somebody who can top that run through the 90s.
Yeah, and you know his stuff got a little eclectic in the 2000s with Lady Killers in 2004, The Terminal, Polar Express. Then he did Cars, where he played Woody Carr. Then he got into the Robert Langdon series in 2006. Then he did like Charlie Wilson's War, The Great Buck Howard, Return with Angels and Demons is Robert Langdon. Then he went into like narration with the Pacific and stuff like that. But I think when it comes to Tom Hanks, I think his crowning achievement was a short that he did on Saturday Night Live called David Pumpkins. And I think that pretty much crowns him as the king and the winner of... Oh, wait, I'm sorry. We're not supposed to announce the winner yet, right? Okay, yeah. Sorry.
Well, wait a minute. Now, for the listeners...
I'm David Pumpkins!
Yes, please explain David Pumpkins for the listeners out there who may not have seen this on Saturday Night Live.
He hosted Saturday Night Live several years ago, and it was a Halloween episode, and... these people were being brought up into this Tower of Terror type of ride. And so it's on this elevator. And the first couple of stops are some scary people, like the girl from The Ring and a bunch of other things. And then one of the stops is Tom Hanks with this pumpkin outfit with his funny fro and these weird bebopping guys in bebopping skeleton outfits. And this weird, like, electronic music. And then he goes, I'm David Pumpkins, you know? And then they're like, was that supposed to be scary? And then, like, he keeps popping up. There was an animated short that was done. People started making David Pumpkin costumes like myself. It was just so funny because he wasn't scary. He was more annoying than anything else.
So... I think for me, Kevin, when I look at Hanks versus Washington, I agree with you. I think Denzel Washington right now is the best actor in Hollywood, period. And it's not, I don't even think it's that close. I truly don't.
Not at all.
I think he's above everybody right now. But I think this is what I also think about Tom Hanks. I think Tom Hanks is America's son.
Everybody loves Tom Hanks. Yeah.
Everybody wants to be Tom Hanks' friend. He wants to be our neighbor. Tom Hanks has more respect than any other actor, I think, out there right now. Now
he's also a Raiders fan.
Yeah, well, they can't be perfect. Sorry. But, no, I mean, it tells me all you need to know when Tom Hanks plays Mr. Rogers.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, so, you know, in truth, because I especially after reading off Tom Hanks's run in the 90s, Kevin, I might have to call this one a draw. This might be a 12-round.
Yeah, I mean, we'll make our final decision next week when we give the comments that the people have said. But yeah, it's tough, man.
I mean,
it's really tough.
This is one that's definitely going to the judges' scorecards, ladies and gentlemen.
This was a good matchup. You and I were debating, you know, who's going to go up against each other, and you were like, yeah, I think we need to do Hanks and Denzel. And I'm like, plus they're around the same age. They're only like two. I think they're only 2 years apart in age. And so it's a good age difference because they both came up around the same time and stuff. So, yeah, they both did television before they started doing a lot of movies.
Both have sons who are actors, because you better get ready for Denzel Washington's son, because after the next Christopher Nolan movie comes out where he's the lead in that, he's going to be a very prominent name.
Very cool. Very cool.
So, and of course, Tom Hanks' son, Colin Hanks, is kind of a nice niche for himself in Hollywood as well. Doing a lot of comedy things.
I just watched him on one of my favorite guilty pleasure teen comedies, Get Over It, with what's her name? Ben Foster's in it, and what's her name from Bring It On?
Oh, Elijah Dushku or Kirsten Dunst?
The main woman. What's her name? Interview with a Vampire.
Yeah, Kirsten Dunst.
Yes, thank you, Kirsten Dunst. Yes, yeah. I just totally brain farted on her name. But,
You know, thinking about it though, Kevin, there might be one thing that gives Tom Hanks the edge.
Hmm.
He got an amazing performance out of a volleyball.
This is very true, and he was David S. Pumpkins.
Yeah, so it might be that.
So before we leave, we did miss something that just broke news today, and I wanted to get your input on it.
Okay, absolutely.
Apparently, Ruby Rose is not going to return as Batgirl going into the second season.
As Batwoman? Really? I had not heard this.
Yeah, it just broke before you came. I'm surprised you didn't see it. And I didn't see reasons why.
I will say this. The CW Arrowverse is all those shows, because of COVID, didn't get to finish their seasons, and they're all delayed until 2021 for their new seasons. I don't know how this is going to be one of the more interesting replacements if this is the case. Yeah, I'm actually rather shocked. It's set,
let's go with IGN here.
Yeah, it looks like I'm looking at CNN. It just, yeah, they're 1 hour ago report, but go ahead.
Batwoman Ruby Rose leaving CW series role will be recast. Quote, "I have made a very difficult decision to not return to Batwoman next year," Rose said. "Ruby Rose is exiting the title role of CW's Batwoman. The network will recast the role as Kate Kane with a new actress for the second season, which isn't slated to debut until January 2021. She also said, "This was not a decision I made lightly, as I have the most utmost respect for the cast, crew, and everyone involved with the show in Vancouver and Los Angeles." Rose continued, "I am beyond appreciative to Greg Berlanti, Sarah Schechter, and Caroline Drees for not only giving me this incredible opportunity, but for welcoming me into the DC universe. They have been both beautifully created." No official reason was given for Rose's expert. Deadline reports that it is not related to the serious injury that Rose endured filming season one. Yeah, it just says the studio and network are firmly committed to Batwoman's second season and long-term future.
I don't know. This is going to be... I mean, you're changing your main character. You're not talking about a supporting character. You're talking about
your main character. And I reviewed this show, and I don't know if you've continued watching it. I haven't. I think we were on the same boat that we felt this was miscast from day one anyway.
Yeah, I need to go back and rewatch a few more episodes of this. I've seen her. I watched the crossover event because it was the big Crisis crossover event, and I saw her in that. I just have never been really able to connect with her. She kind of reminds me a little bit of Kristen Stewart. She doesn't seem to have a wide range to her.
Yeah, and I just don't, you know, I just didn't like the direction that they took the character. I didn't like the look. It's not the Batwoman I wanted to see.
Yeah, so, well, interesting breaking news. I'd be curious to see what happens here. We'll be following up on this when we get some more news on this and maybe who the CW is going to cast. It's going to be interesting for the CW next year, Kevin. Arrow is done. They're doing a Superman and Lois Lane show using the Superman that they established in the Supergirl show as well as the Lois Lane. And they still haven't decided if they're going to go forward with the Arrow spinoff show that they kind of teased in the season finale of Arrow. So interesting times at the CW and their DC universe shows right now.
I just want a traditional Batwoman.
Well, you're thinking Batgirl, I think, more than you are Batwoman.
Whatever.
Yeah. They are two different characters, so. But with that, it's been a fun show. Next week, we'll be going to the judges' scorecards for Hanks versus Washington, because it's going to be close, Kevin.
And then we're going to announce another versus throwdown.
Yeah, we got to put some thought into this. We've done a director, we've done actors. What's next on the list?
Yeah, so, we've got some ideas.
Yeah, that we do. So with that, though, as always, stay safe, respect each other, and enjoy your fandom.